This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Feeling satisfied?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. In these tough economic times, companies are trying extra hard to win you over, so you'll spend money with them. The first part seems to be working. Customer satisfaction is at its highest level in a year, according to a survey this morning from the University of Michigan. But we don't know if that'll translate into spending. People just don't have extra cash right now. A little more about this survey. Restaurants and hotels saw a nice bump in customer satisfaction. Even cable companies had their best showing ever. They still ranked second to last. Guess who was at the bottom? This is your captain speaking. More from Elisa Roth.
They've gotten rid of peanuts, pillows, and legroom, so no surprise then that airlines are more disappointing than ever. The one exception is Southwest, which is
very high levels of passenger satisfaction. I mean, it's almost like it belongs to a different industry.
Klaus Fornell is a business professor at the University of Michigan and founder of the American Customer Satisfaction Index. Apparently, it wouldn't take much to make flyers happier. Fornell says he expects other airlines to get rid of their hub-and-spoke models, which would make it easier for them to
take you from destination A to B, usually with your luggage and usually on time.
Don't expect things to improve anytime soon, though. Many of the airlines in the survey are in merger talks, and Fornell says limited competition means little incentive to improve customer service. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Things are not looking good for Wall Street this morning. The producer price index comes out. It's probably going to show a decent-sized increase in wholesale prices. Home Depot has already reported a 66% drop in profits for the first quarter. And overseas, the markets are down. In Asia, stocks ended about 1% lower. Same story in Europe so far. Stocks down 1%. Wall Street had small gains yesterday. The Dow added 41 points to 13,028. The NASDAQ was up 12, and the S&P 500 climbed 1 point. The Environmental Defense Fund comes out with a new report today on going green. Yeah, we've heard this kind of thing before, but companies might want to listen again. There is some serious cash to be saved. Sarah Gardner reports from our sustainability desk.
Environmental Defense says there's more to going green than energy-saving light bulbs and recycling paper. The group's Gwen Ruda says the new report aims to inspire corporations to do more.
I think a lot of people have now gotten the idea that environmentalism and good business strategy go hand in hand, but they don't really know what to do about it.
The Environmental Defense Report has some examples. Take Stonyfield Farm. The yogurt maker is saving more than $1 million a year by switching from plastic lids to foil tops, which require less energy and water use. Meantime, Macy's is hiring a company to install solar roofs on more than 24 stores. Environmental Defense is also lauding a new practice in the car insurance industry, mileage-based auto insurance. The less you drive, the lower your premium. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
If you totaled up all the money you've ever spent buying cars, I'm guessing it won't add up to this. A 1961 Ferrari GT California just sold at auction for a shade under $11 million. That is a world record. A British radio DJ was the buyer. If that car sounds familiar, you may have seen Ferris Bueller driving it.
The 1961 Ferrari 250 GT California. Less than 100 were made. It is his love. It is his passion.
It is his fault he didn't lock the garage.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Tuesday, May 20th on Marketplace.org. Some people place part of the blame for higher prices on speculators in the commodities markets. A Senate panel will look into that today. Jeremy Hobson reports from Washington.
In the last 5 years, the amount of money invested into commodities has grown 20-fold. That's largely the result of speculators gambling on commodity futures. Now, Congress wants to know what effect that's having on consumers and if lawmakers need to take action.
Just looking at what Congress has available to them right now, there's not a lot they can do.
Chad Hart is an agricultural economist at Iowa State University. He says lawmakers may need to give the Commodity Futures Trading Commission more authority to regulate a fast-changing marketplace, one in which farmers are making planting decisions based in part on Wall Street speculation. Tom Bias heads the National Farmers Union.
That money is coming in there to make money. It's not coming in there to take delivery of corn or wheat or soybeans or any other commodity that's traded.
Observers say mounting pressure to bring down prices is starting to get to the CFTC and to Congress. In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Also in Washington today, House and Senate negotiators will try to sketch out a federal budget for 2009. And a group of budget experts from both parties will launch a campaign against debt. They say the government has a debt addiction. John Dimsdale has more.
Ever spend money you haven't got? The Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget says the government does it all the time. Today, the nonprofit group issues a 12-step program to help politicians deal with their addiction to spending money the government doesn't have. Maya McGinnis is the group's president. She says politicians are to blame for deepening deficits, but they aren't the only ones.
We also have to ask voters to pay attention to these issues and not be kind of hoodwinked that you can have it all. Nobody really believes that we can have big tax cuts, new spending initiatives, and somehow we're not going to have to pay the price sooner or later.
The bipartisan committee's political stars include former Treasury Secretary Lawrence Summers and former Fed Chief Paul Volcker. They're asking the presidential candidates to make living within our means a priority. That includes fixing Social Security and health care, paying for any new spending, and using honest numbers. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
The European Union has been criticized for all the subsidies it gives farmers. The EU has listened and is working on changing the system. But that doesn't mean European taxpayers will be getting a refund. Stephen Beard reports from London.
The EU's farm subsidy system, the Common Agricultural Policy, costs a cool $62 billion a year. It's long been deeply unpopular with European taxpayers. Today, the EU unveils the latest proposals for reform. They aim, among other things, to end permanently the policy of set-aside. That's the practice of paying farmers to leave 10% of their land fallow. It was designed in another era to prevent the overproduction of certain crops. As farmers' spokesman Tom Hind concedes, that policy looks more and more irrelevant.
With the market conditions for cereals at the moment and the requirement for food production, those objectives are no longer valid.
But in spite of the soaring price of cereals, EU farm subsidies won't be reduced, just redirected. Under the reforms announced today, farmers will get more money for adopting environment-friendly methods. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
I'm sure you've heard of investment clubs. Maybe you're in one yourself. People get together, have some brie and crackers, and talk about the way they can make money. Well, here's a new spin on that. A group that meets to talk about their money and then gives it away. Here's Heidi Pickman.
Please help yourself to pizza, soda, wine, whatever else.
A group of 10 gathers on a Wednesday night in a Palo Alto, California living room. They're part of something called a giving circle. Each member has contributed $5,000, and with the help of Oakland-based Clarence Foundation, they've been learning about grassroots nonprofits that assist youth in Africa. Tonight, they've ranked the charities by how much each member would give for their efforts. Caitlin Drews reads the results.
Looking down the list, for Girls on the Go, no one said under $10,000. The lowest for garbage recyclers was $6,000.
Giving circles like this one are popping up all over the country, says the Forum of Regional Associations of Grantmakers. In 2005, the number was roughly 200. By last year, it had doubled. Daria Tutanico is with the forum. She says giving circles offer members a chance to do more than just throw money at a problem.
Many people have been writing checks and supporting good work, but many of those people have felt that they wanted to do more. They wanted to get more connected to a solution to problems they see in their community.
Tutanico says in the past 4 years, giving circles in the U.S. have donated more than $100 million. Some have as many as 500 members, like Impact Austin in Texas. Last year, the group granted $400,000, mostly to programs for children. Other groups are smaller, like the 13-member Zawadi Circle in New Orleans. Christine Jordan helped found the group. She says the name Zawadi comes from a Swahili word for gift.
Since the focus of our giving circle is to improve the quality of life for people of African descent in New Orleans, we thought it would be appropriate to use an African term. Basically, what we're doing is trying to give a gift.
Back in Palo Alto, the Clarence Foundation group is close to deciding what their gift will be to the grassroots groups in Africa.
How about taking 500 from Girls on the Go, giving it to YIN, and calling it a day?
Yeah!
In Palo Alto, California, I'm Heidi Pickman for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.